Sometimes we get caught up in looking for and marveling at the biggest animals, whether it's a black bear up north or watching a bald eagle soaring over the Mississippi, or maybe it's catching a glimpse of an elk near Clam Lake. You know, these are majestic creatures and they can really grab our attention. But often the small and the easy to miss species are just as fascinating and engrossing when we do focus on them. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network as we talk about Wisconsin's dragonflies and damselflies with Robert Dubois, who is an aquatic ecologist in the Bureau of Endangered Resources of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He's our guest for the day, and we certainly invite you to join in with your questions and comments. Do you notice and appreciate dragonflies? You have a spot where you can reliably see them? If you have a photo, we'd love to have you share it on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show as we visit with Robert Dubois. With us by phone, Robert, hi, thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Great to be here.
What are dragonflies exactly?
Well, they're an order of insect, and we consider them to be aquatic insects because most of their life is spent in a nymph stage underwater. So the part where they're flying around is a relatively small part of their life, but very interesting and beautiful, obviously. And they're broken into two groups, what we call dragonflies and damselflies, two suborders that have to do with how the wings are shaped and the structure of the head and minor things like that.
Mm-hmm. Is it easy to tell the difference, or?
Yeah, it's quite easy to tell the difference. When they're perched, dragonflies generally have their wings outspread, perhaps drooped a little, but along the lines of a small airplane sort of thing. When damselflies are perched, they generally have the wings folded up over their backs, sometimes spread a little bit, but not out fully perpendicular the way dragonflies do. Dragonflies are more heavily bodied. They're generally stronger flyers. Damselflies are more precise, quick, maneuverable flyers. And the head shape is generally different, with damselflies having the eyes out at the ends of the head, kind of like a hammerhead shark almost, whereas dragonflies have more of a globe-shaped head with the eyes often touching along the middle.
We have some photos up on our Facebook page that I think should help people out. There's some absolutely beautiful photos of the dragonflies and damselflies. What are they primarily? What do they eat?
Well, they're fiercely predatory, both as in the adult stage where they're feeding on other flying insects, whatever's available. They will certainly take mosquitoes, but they're not selectively looking for them. They'll take whatever small flies and so forth are present. In the underwater stage, as nymphs, they're also very predatory, and they'll feed on pretty much anything that's smaller than them, including other smaller dragonflies and damselflies. Some of the larger species will even take small tadpoles and small fish.
Wow. So their life cycle, maybe just run through their life cycles.
Sure. generally, they have a 1 or 2 year life cycle. After the eggs are laid, the nymph goes through a bunch of instars. That's how they grow, kind of like a snake needing to shed its skin in order to get bigger. So they'll go through, on average, about 12 of these instars, in which they get larger and larger. And then when they reach the final instar, they just wait for the right combination of temperature and day length and perhaps some other environmental cues, and then they'll crawl out onto an emergence perch near the edge of the water, and the nymphal exoskeleton splits open, and the newly formed dragonfly pushes its way out and is able to fly off within an hour or so. And their first flights are away from water. They need to spend a week or so gaining strength and becoming sexually mature. So that's when you see swarms of them around fields and the edges of roads and so forth, just eating a lot of prey items. And when they're fully mature, then they come back to the water body and mate and lay eggs and
start the whole process over.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Rick in La Crosse, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was out in northwest South Dakota where it's very arid, hiking up in the National Forest, the Custer National Forest, and dragonflies were just thick up there last summer, and I just wondered, there's no water around, why would there be so many dragonflies?
Sure. Well, you know, there are dragonflies anywhere where there's any water at all. So even in the more average regions of the Dakotas, for example, there are still going to be pothole ponds scattered around. There's going to be creeks. There's going to be some rivers. And dragonflies will fly miles from their breeding site. So if you see a swarm of them feeding, you know, in a desert area, they could have come from quite some distance away. Certainly there's less diversity in the Dakotas than there is here in Wisconsin, where we have a greater variety of aquatic habitats. But there's still going to be quite a number of species in those more arid states.
Interesting. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in as well. Questions about dragonflies? We hope you will join us. And also, if you have some photos, please post them. Want to mention that Judith posted a link to a very cool slideshow of slow motion video of dragonflies, which is very cool. And also, listener Emery posted some of her great photos, and I mean great photos, on our Facebook page. So if you want to see those, just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you will be able to see them. And, of course, to join in the conversation with your questions or comments, maybe you've got a good dragonfly story. I'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. You know, Bob, the New York Times had an article and some videos a couple of months ago that looked at what fearsome predators dragonflies are, and what makes they're really good hunters. What makes them good hunters?
Yeah, that video footage you're referring to was absolutely spectacular. Just love to see that. They're strong flyers, and they can not only fly fast, but they're also maneuverable. So they can go sideways, up, down, backwards, and so forth. They create turbulence and then use it to maneuver with. So they're very quick, very maneuverable. Their six legs, when they're flying, are pointed roughly forward, kind of like a sort of a little basket almost. Their vision is extremely good, probably the best vision in the insect world. So their compound eyes have up to 3,000 of these little facets called omatidia. So they see movement extremely well. So a dragonfly can be flying along at top speed, let's say 30 miles an hour, and see a prey item as much as 30, 40 feet away and just zoom in on it and hit it. So they're masters of the air.
Sounds like it. Evan in Madison has a question. Hi, Evan.
Hi. I see green darners really early in the spring, and I'm wondering, I've heard people say that they migrate, and I'm wondering whether that's true or whether just really early emergers.
That is true. So the green darners, the common green darners that we have here in Wisconsin have both a migratory component to their population and a resident one. So the migratory ones the ones that are raised here will fly south to the southern tier of states or Mexico in the fall where they reproduce, and then those young that are produced down there will fly up here in the spring, and they're generally the first dragonflies we see each year. Sometimes in the north they'll arrive when there's still ice on some of the lakes. So they're a good couple of weeks ahead of our resident species generally, and they come in huge numbers. So they're very they're large, they're colorful, and people really notice them.
And do other dragonflies migrate like that, or is that rare?
It's a a little bit unusual. We've got about 164 species in Wisconsin, and only a handful of them migrate, and not all as strongly as the common green darner does. But we do have a handful of other species that are known to be migratory. And nationwide now, there's a project going on that people can become involved with if they want to study more about migration. We're trying to learn more about it, how far they go, how fast, what species are involved, and so forth. It's very hard to, for example, mark dragonflies and ever hope to recover anything. You'd have to mark billions of them. So we rely on citizen volunteers, citizen scientists, we call it, to help record information.
Very cool. Evan, does that help you out?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. We have Kelly and Spitzer next. Hi, Kelly.
Yes.
What's on your mind?
I think you just answered it, my question. We were sitting out in our deck last fall in our jacuzzi, and we saw thousands of dragonflies go by at dusk, and I was wondering if they migrated, and I guess they do.
Absolutely do. And there are other darners, which is a group of large dragonflies that the common green darner is a part of that group. And some of those other darners are also migratory. So that could have been a mixed group of big darners, or it could have been all common green darners. But they will move in huge numbers.
There.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly. And Alan in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Yeah, I was fishing once in northern Wisconsin, and I was being attacked by a number of mosquitoes. And in the middle of it, as I was flailing my arms around trying to slap them away, I saw two dragonflies coming in, big ones, coming straight at me from a little bit of a distance away, and they just swooped in and swirled around me, ate up the mosquitoes, and disappeared.
That is a good story, Alan.
I don't know if I thought it was some kind of magical story or if it really happened, if they actually feed on mosquitoes, but it seemed like that was the case.
That's not all that unusual to happen. We do attract a lot of bugs when we're out there, so we attract a moving food source, and dragonflies will help us out sometimes like that.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate it very much. Bob Dubois, our guest today, aquatic ecologist in the Bureau of Endangered Resources of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, talking with him today about dragonflies and damselflies. Join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And for sure, go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show if you're near a computer, because there's some great photography up there. You could also post a question while you were there. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Along about 11:45 today, we will be talking about exploring the connections between energy, air quality, and climate. Some interesting conversation there with John Greenler and Tracy Holloway. So that's coming along about 11:45. Right now, Bob Dubois talking with us about Wisconsin's dragonflies and damselflies. Great to have him along. And again, join us at 800-642-1234. Got an email from Lori, who in Whitewater, and she says, it seems that dragonflies are intently checking me when I come across one. It will dart to and fro and seems as though it's really interested in me. What's up with that? I've kind of seen that myself, to be perfectly honest.
Gee whiz, I wish I knew the answer to that question. Sometimes it does seem like they're scoping us out. Obviously, I don't think like a dragonfly, so I don't know what they're thinking. But we do attract mosquitoes, deer flies, and other flying food sources. So they will hang around us for that reason.
Yeah, I guess maybe they're just looking around to see if there's a mosquito over our left shoulder or something.
Could be.
Well, you're an aquatic ecologist with the DNR.
Yes.
Talk about your work. What do you do?
Well, I'm a research scientist. And I, as you mentioned, I work in the Bureau of Endangered Resources. So I do research as part of my job, and a lot of that is centered on developing tools for people to identify dragonflies and damselflies better. So that includes improving dichotomous keys to the nymphs so that we can correctly identify them. On my own time, I've also written a couple of field guides about dragonflies and damselflies. So I'm very interested in teaching people how to enjoy them and how to identify them. So that kind of ties into the second part of my job, which is citizen science related.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to get people engaged in natural resource issues, and I typically use dragonflies and damselflies as kind of a hook, kind of a focus, to give a little structure to what I'm trying to do, whether it be habitat protection-wise or whatever. So we started a Wisconsin Dragonfly Society, where we have a newsletter, we hold meetings, we host field trip outings. We do a lot of learning, educational kind of things. We have a Facebook group page where people can ask questions, show photographs, get answers to questions they may have in a very non-threatening environment, newsletter, email distribution list. We also have a Wisconsin Dragonfly and Damselfly Survey Program that's been going on for about a dozen years, where we have a website, and I'll give this information later, where people can post species that they've seen, and we add that information into a database, which improves our knowledge of where species are located in the state, what their ranges are, and even what the necessary habitats are, particularly for the rarer ones, which is what we really want to know so that, you know, special areas can be protected. For the state, I work more broadly than that. I have fish responsibilities, and I'm the aquatic insect taxa person for the Bureau of Endangered Resources, which means I do a lot of identifying of things and so forth.
Well, you're a busy guy.
Yeah, I am. And my hobby is pretty much the same thing as my job. So,
so that's
my
a good thing.
My wife wonders when I'm not working sometimes.
Bob Dubois, our guest, as we talk with him about dragonflies and damselflies, here's a kind of an interesting story. I wonder if you've heard this before. It's from William, who says, as a child, this on my Facebook page, as a child living in California, my Japanese mother, who was a war bride, would catch a dragonfly and tie thread around its body and keep it as a pet. She told me that Japanese children often did this in years past.
Well, you know, there's so many fascinating cultural aspects to dragonflies and damselflies. And in Japan, where they're really highly revered, there are a number of preserves that are set solely to protect dragonflies and damselflies, and they get, you know, many thousands of visitors a year. So different cultures have different cultural feelings about them. In some cases, almost worship kind of thing. There's a lot of mythology that surrounds them. Some of it, evil in the sense that they're thought to sew the eyes shut of small children who are naughty, or, you know, they bite sting mules or different things like that. None of which is true, but there's a very, very broad mythology that's grown around the world about dragonflies and damselflies. Really interesting, thick books on this.
Bob in Two Rivers has a comment. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm a beekeeper, and I have four beehives. And in August, several times, I've seen maybe about 30 dragonflies just hovering in front of my beehives, just nailing and taking the bees as they come in and out of the hive. And then also when I was up in Canada camping, we always got into the tent when the mosquitoes came out. And I'd lie down watching all these mosquitoes at the screen of the tent, and every now and then a dragonfly would come and take one, and then go, and then at about 15 seconds later, come back, take another mosquito, and just keep on going back and forth until he got about 10 or so mosquitoes. I thought it was pretty exciting because he was right next to my face getting those mosquitoes.
Very exciting, very exciting. You know, sometimes they help us in their need to eat, and other times they can cause us some problems, like with your bees. But
Thanks a lot for calling, Bob. Appreciate your call. We have Dorothy in Presque Isle with a comment. Hi, Dorothy. Dorothy, are you there? Let's see. We got her? Huh. Guess we lost her. Well, I tell you what. We've got plenty more for us to talk about. Are there any that are threatened or endangered?
Yes. We've got, in Wisconsin, we've got four species on our endangered list and two on our threatened list. We also have a state ranking system where we rank things on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being, you know, very well represented and not at all threatened, 1 being critically imperiled, and 2 being also imperiled. So we've got about 25% of our dragonflies are on that list as either ones or twos. But in terms of the actual listed ones, just 6 here in Wisconsin, and we have just 1 species in Wisconsin that is on the federal endangered list, and that's the Heinz emerald dragonfly.
Elsa in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have some friends visiting from Arizona next month, and my friend Doug is a dragonfly expert. In fact, he's working on the book, The Dragonflies of Sonora. And I was wondering, where in Wisconsin can I take him to see some unusual dragonflies, or just dragonflies and damselflies in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. Now, is that Doug Danforth?
It is Doug Danforth,
yeah.
Yep.
I bet you he'd love to see some of our bigger, cleaner rivers. So we've got some showcase rivers here in Wisconsin, and I'm talking about the St. Croix River and the Flambeau River, particularly the South Fork of the Flambeau River, and also the Chippewa River up near, say, Bruce.
Did you say Chippewa?
Yes, yeah. So they'd have a wide variety of beautiful and some of them rare club-tailed dragonflies that he, of course, wouldn't get a chance to see down in Arizona. He also might be interested in seeing some peatland species. So we've got some emerald dragonflies that live in bogs and fens, peatland-type habitats, that are really beautiful, very kind of elusive and challenging, you know, fast flyers, all the elements of challenge that an experienced dragonflyer would really enjoy. And there are, of course, peatlands scattered all around the state. And he could certainly contact me to get some specific locations.
Directly. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. So, Bob, you know him at least by reputation, if not personally.
Community in the dragonfly world.
And, yeah, I've been out with him many, many times in Arizona, and he's just, I can't believe the photographs he takes. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
We'd probably enjoy this show, as a matter of fact. Thanks,
well,
Elsa.
That's just what I was thinking. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have, here's an interesting email from Paul. Saw a dragonfly last summer holding onto a German yellow jacket. I thought, all right, since I really don't like those yellow jackets, I sat and watched them tussle until the dragonfly's head fell off. I was rather taken aback. It was a large dragonfly, much larger than the yellow jacket. Who might you suspect first attacked who?
Well, you know, I've not heard of that happening, but apparently the yellow jacket was able to score a direct hit there somehow. Often our larger dragonflies will prey on bees and yellow jackets, but I suppose if they get you know, on the wrong end of some machinery there, that they can take a fatal hit.
Yeah. Jim in Milwaukee. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, while I was on hold, I thought of another question. So I'm going to hit the new question first. Helgramites, you know, they make great bait. But where do they come from? And is using helgramites as bait, is that damaging populations of dragonflies? Where do they get them?
Well, okay, helgramites is sort of a broad term that people often use to describe anything that's sort of nymph-like and large underwater. So in that sort of general usage, that could include the nymphs of dragonflies. But helgramites more specifically are actually the larvae of a different order of aquatic insects, the fish flies and the alder flies. So they're not actually dragonflies.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
The other question I had is, I live in Milwaukee, and growing up in the 50s and 60s, primarily what we saw around the area, and in this was in the more rural areas of Milwaukee County when it was rural back then, these large, normal-sized dragonflies that were primarily bluish or greenish in body color.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you hardly see those around here anywhere, and all we see are these large dragonflies with four black spots on their wings, which we never saw back then, and I'm just wondering what's going on.
Well, there could have been, changes to the habitat over time. The large blue-green ones that you're talking about are probably darners, and they tend to be swarm feeders, so they may show up in an area in big feeding swarms for a while and then be gone when they've exhausted that prey source. So it could be a matter of when you've happened to be there, but more likely it's just that there's been some changes to the habitat. And the ones with the spotted wings you're referring to are skimmer dragonflies, a number of possible species within the skimmer family. And they like ponds and, shallow areas where they'll perch around the edges quite a bit. So my guess is there's been some habitat change over time.
There you go. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Jerry in West Bend. Hi, Jer.
Hi. Hi, Bob. This is Jerry.
Oh, hi, Jerry.
I want to bring up a couple of events coming up.
There's sure.
Urban Ecology Center's having a dragonfly workshop on Saturday, June 29th, from 1:30 to 3:30.
Now, where is this? I'm sorry?
In Milwaukee, the Urban Ecology Center.
Oh, okay.
And then River Edge Nature Center is having a dragonfly count, their annual dragonfly count, July 20th from 10 to 3 on. It'll be a Saturday. We do that every year, count all the dragonflies and damselflies that we can see.
Would this be a good time for me to mention some of the activities?
It would definitely be. Go ahead.
Okay, so we've formed last year a Wisconsin Dragonfly Society. And we're going to be having our annual meeting, which is a spring event this year. It's June 7th through 9th, and it's at the University of Waukesha Field Station. And there'll be information on that on our Facebook group page, and I'll also be sending out email information on that. So that's an event that's designed to do some training. There'll be a training workshop, some learning, a lot of meet and greet time, quite a bit of field time, just a time for folks to get together, get to know each other that are interested in dragonflies. The event at the Urban Ecology Center that Jerry just mentioned is in order to get a citizen science project going at that Urban Ecology Center for dragonflies this year. So we're partnering with that center. So there'll be an introductory workshop. And again, that's at on June 29th at 1:30 p.m. So if folks are interested, they could visit the Urban Ecology Center website,
mm-hmm.
which is at http://urbanecology.org.
We'll post that up, or maybe already have. If not, we'll get it posted in just a matter of a second or two on my Facebook page.
Okay. So our Facebook group page, people can find us at Facebook at groups and Wisconsin Dragonfly Society. And all they have to do is just like us there, and then we'll add them to the group. Our website is called the Wisconsin Odonata. That's O-D-O-N-A-T-A.
Yep.
Wisconsin Odonata Survey. That was started about 12 years ago, which is why we used the scientific name back then. But it's got information about all of our 164 species, flight period charts, county distribution information, and an interactive reporting page where people can report what they see, and then that useful information gets added into our website.
You don't sell any T-shirts, do you, with a big dragonfly on them?
We don't have any right now, but that's a really good idea.
I like that idea a lot. I thought right away, I thought, man, I wonder if they've got a T-shirt. I'd love one of those.
Yeah. Well, dragonfly stuff is popular right now. It's kind of trendy, and it's an appropriate activity for people to get involved in, helping survey and helping improve our information about where species are located. And it's an interesting and easy thing to do. The field guides have gotten much better in recent years. And
Don in Monona, by the way, wondered if you could recommend any books or guides on dragonflies.
Well, there's a Dragonflies of the North Woods by Kurt Mead, and the second edition is very good, and I recommend that. There's also a couple of guides that are available through me. One of them is the color guide to Wisconsin dragonflies, which I can actually make available free to folks if they contact me. Now, my contact information would be robert.dubois, that's D-U-B-O-I-S, at wisconsin.gov, so they can get a copy of this color guide to Wisconsin dragonflies free. I also have a damselfly guide that our society is making available to people at a very low price, and they can inquire about that as well. And there are other national guides that are larger books, but also very good. So there's a lot to choose from.
And Lynn in Eau Claire has an experience to share. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi there, Bob.
Hi.
About 5 years ago, my baby girl, my one and only baby girl, was married here at Rotten Gun Park in Eau Claire. She had a Buddhist ceremony. We set a platform for the llama in front of kind of a little stream down there. And the dragonflies were, it was mostly the size of my beautiful daughter. The dragonflies made it seem like a fairy tale. It was beautiful. It was undescribably beautiful. And the dragonflies had a lot to do with making her special day even more special for me.
That's a great story. That's a great story. They are captivating to watch, no question about it.
And Lynn, I hope somebody had a movie camera of some sort operating.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for calling. That's a great story. Appreciate it. Dick in Montford has a question. Hi, Dick.
Hi. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hello. Good.
Okay, listen, I'm 75. When I was a child, I remember dragonflies vividly, a lot of them when I would play outdoors. And as a child, I was not tempted to catch them and pull their wings off or any of that kind of evil stuff. We always admired them, thought they were beautiful, and they were very benign. You know, they didn't bother us, and we just thought they were neat. And then I suppose part of it was I wasn't spending as much time out in nature as I grew older, but the dragonflies really seemed to disappear. And later on, I not only learned that they were good for keeping down the mosquitoes, but I got the sense that they were pretty sensitive to the DDT that was being sprayed pretty heavily. And so it was sort of a kind of bounced back and bit us in the neck because it killed out the dragonflies. Is that right?
Well, some species could be sensitive to that. The real key with dragonflies is the habitat availability. One of my favorite sayings is to refer to the movie Field of Dreams and the saying, you know, if you build it, they will come. Dragonflies are very good at dispersing, and so they will find whatever the particular habitat type they need. So a newly created pond, for example, will get colonized quite rapidly. And species that even seem like they're not all that strong at flying will easily find widely scattered across the landscape pockets of habitat that are just right for them. So what we've been suffering from is you know, habitat loss over time. Certainly, we only have maybe, 50% of the wetland area that we had historically in Wisconsin. So we need to protect the remaining habitats. And if we do that, the dragonflies will find it. They'll be there. Another important point that you alluded to is that, you know, you haven't gone out there that much. And so dragonfly watching can be kind of a little like fishing. You know, you go a couple of times and you have great luck 20 years ago. Well, you think, you know, you could have walked across the river on the backs of fish, and now you go a couple times and you don't catch anything, and the fish are way down. But it could be just kind of your perspective based on a limited amount of experience, too.
Yeah, definitely.
So probably a combination of habitat loss and your perspective on it.
Dick, thanks for calling. We have, by the way, a lot more photos on our Facebook page. Dragonfly photos are just... and Bob, I hope you go to the page and take a look, because there's some really cool stuff here.
I can't wait.
Yeah, really. And there may be a question or two you could answer, too, that we didn't get to. But Steve emailed, wonders, is there currently an effort to create a breeding dragonfly and damselfly atlas for Wisconsin, like there is one for birds?
Yeah. The whole key there is to get enough people up to speed with their identification skills. So the birders, you know, they have an army of competent observers. And, you know, when I first got started with dragonflies and damselflies just, 15 or so years ago, there weren't even any field guides available, and pretty much nobody could help you identify them. So we're way behind the birders. We're trying to develop, a trained, population of nature enthusiasts that knows how to identify them. And we're making progress. But we still lack that critical mass that would be necessary in order to do something as major as the breeding bird atlas. But that's the direction I hope we're going in.
Well, Bob, it's a great pleasure having a chance to talk with you today. I hope we can do this again. You come back and be with us again?
Oh, I'd love to. This was a ton of fun for me.
Yeah, it was fun for me, too. Robert Dubois, aquatic ecologist in the Bureau of Endangered Resources of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Our guest. That really was a fascinating chat about dragonflies, wasn't it? And it's good to be reminded that habitats are fragile and dynamic, so we need to take care of them. Coming up next, folks from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute will help us think about our own habitat and specifically air quality. They're doing some interesting and important work on the connection between energy, climate, and the air we breathe. And that's coming up in just a minute here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.